Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
After she died, the house started to rot in silence. I stopped turning on the lights. I stopped opening the curtains. I stopped shaving, eating properly, even talking to anyone. My name's Daniel. I'm 35, and I haven't left the house in 2 weeks. The only thing I do is sit in the same fucking spot in the living room, holding the same phone, waiting for nothing. No one calls. No one visits. Everyone who used to say, "I'm here if you need anything," vanished as soon as the funeral was over. Every room still smells like her. Her hairbrush is still in the bathroom. Her coffee mug is still on the counter. Her shoes are still by the door. I tried once and ended up on the floor, screaming into a jacket like a lunatic.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Grief isn't poetic. It doesn't make you wise or calm. It turns you into something pathetic, like an animal stuck under a rock, bleeding, crying, choking on the dust. Most nights I don't sleep. I just sit there, watching the old messages we sent each other. I read them like they were scripture. I know each one by heart. Sometimes I try to send her one, just to see the words fail to deliver. Just to feel the rejection again. It helps me remember she's really gone. Tonight wasn't any different. At least not until the phone buzzed. At first I thought it was some spam. I didn't even look. I just stared ahead, numb, eyes burning. Then it buzzed again, and again. I picked it up, expecting some random group chat or someone asking for money. Instead, I saw her name, her profile picture, her old photo, the one with the scarf and the red lipstick she used for our anniversary. I thought maybe I was losing it. Maybe my phone bugged out and showed an old chat. But no, the message was new. Just a minute ago. I'm scared. My hands froze. I opened the chat and stared at it like it was something alive. The typing bubble appeared.
"I don't know where I am. I'm cold. It's wet. I think I'm in the cemetery."
I couldn't breathe. I kept looking at the drawer next to the bed. That's where I had put her phone. I still had it. She couldn't be texting me. I ran to the bedroom, opened the drawer, and there it was, still locked, still dead. Another message came.
"Please come get me. I don't want to be alone anymore."
I didn't even think. I grabbed my keys and left the house like a man possessed. The road was empty. No other cars, no lights, just the sound of my engine and the loud, heavy beat of my pulse. The cemetery wasn't far, just 15 minutes from home. I knew the way too well. I didn't cry this time. I just gripped the wheel and stared ahead, mouth dry, heart pounding in my chest like it wanted out. I was terrified, not just of what I might find, but of the fact that I still wanted it to be her. Even if it made no sense, the cemetery gate was locked, but I didn't stop. I climbed over it with shaky hands, scraping my arm on the rusted edge. The air inside was damp, full of the bitter smell of grass and something old rotting underground. It was silent, so silent that I could hear every step I took on the wet gravel. I walked straight to her grave, barely using the flashlight on my phone. I didn't want to see more than I had to. I passed other tombstones, crosses, old statues of angels that looked more like corpses. The closer I got to her name, the heavier my body felt. My knees wanted to give out. My chest ached like someone was slowly pressing their fingers into my ribs. When I reached her plot, everything looked untouched. No fresh dirt, no signs of anything dug up, no footsteps. Her name was still there, her photo, a small one embedded in the stone, still clean. My hand reached for the headstone to steady myself. That's when I heard something behind me, a shift in the dirt, a crunch, a footstep. I turned, but it was already too late. A sharp impact exploded in the back of my skull. My vision blinked out. I collapsed onto the wet ground, head spinning, limbs loose. I felt a foot crash into my ribs, and then another to my stomach. I curled up, coughing blood. I tried to push myself up, but a hand grabbed my hair and slammed my face into the dirt. I couldn't see who it was yet. My nose was bleeding, my eyes blurred. The voice that spoke next wasn't just angry. It was shaking with rage, the kind of fury that doesn't care about consequences. "You deserve worse than this." I recognized the voice. It was Caleb, her brother. He was always the quiet one, never liked me much, but never got in the way either, until now. "You think you could just live your life like nothing happened?" He kicked me again. I screamed. My side felt like it was broken in three places. I could barely speak.
"Caleb, please."
"Shut up. You think I didn't know what you did to her? I saw her face. I saw the bruises. I saw how she flinched every time someone raised their voice. You broke her. You killed her." I tried to lift my hand, tried to explain, but he stomped on it. I heard something snap in my fingers. Pain shot up my arm like fire. I wanted to call the cops. I swear I did, but I didn't want her name dragged through the mud. I wanted justice, my way, so I waited. And hell, all this ruse really paid out. I started crying. I didn't even know why. Maybe because part of me was still holding on to the lie. Maybe because hearing it from him made it final. He pulled out a knife, not big, but long enough. He knelt beside me, face trembling, sweat pouring down. "I want you to feel pain. I want you to remember her screams every time you close your eyes. She begged me not to tell anyone. She begged me to stay away. But now she's dead because of you." He raised the knife, and for a second, I gave up. Time moved strange. It was like everything around me slowed down, except my heartbeat, which felt like it was punching through my chest. I twisted my body, felt the blade slice across my ribs, but miss anything deep. I grabbed his arm with everything I had left and shoved him backwards. He stumbled, lost his footing, hit the gravestone behind him hard. The sound his head made was sickening. A thick, heavy crack. He dropped instantly. The knife clattered beside him. I crawled back, panting, coughing blood into the grass. My vision blurred, but I forced myself to move. I stood slowly, limping toward him. He wasn't dead. He was breathing shallow and gurgling. His eyes flickered. He looked at me. "Help me." I stood over him, dripping blood, body shaking. I didn't feel like a man anymore, just something hollow wearing skin. "You were right." His lips trembled. "I killed her. I loved her, but I couldn't control it. It was an accident." He let out a weak sound, maybe a sob, maybe a breath. "But what I did to you, that wasn't an accident." I kicked him in the chest. He groaned. I lifted my leg again, and then I saw it. by her grave, just a few meters away. The dirt had shifted. Something white was sticking out. I squinted. It was her hand. A pale, bloated hand breaking through the soil. Her head followed, slow and heavy. Her hair clumped with the dirt. Her mouth partly open. Her eyes wide and unblinking. She stared at us. She stared straight at me. Everything inside me broke. I turned and ran. I didn't think, didn't care about the pain, didn't even try to make sense of what I saw. I tripped twice, once on a grave and once on a broken lantern. My hand was bleeding from a cut I didn't feel. I reached the gate, climbed it like an animal, dropped to the and crawled into the car. I didn't stop until I passed out behind the wheel. They found Caleb's body the next morning. I was unconscious in the car. They brought me in, patched me up, and put me in a room. At first, they didn't know what to do with me. No witnesses, no weapon, just a corpse in a cemetery and me covered in blood. I told them everything about the messages, about her, about Caleb. None of it mattered. 2 days later, Caleb's wife went to the police. She brought in a laptop and a folder full of screenshots. He had everything saved. Messages he sent me pretending to be my wife. Voice notes she recorded before dying. Screenshots from WhatsApp web. Her session was still open on his computer from a visit months before. He used that to bait me. She told them Caleb had warned her that something might happen to him. And if it did, she had to show the cops everything. So she did. Now I'm in a cell, telling this story to anyone who'll listen. They gave me 10 years, said it was manslaughter, said I lost control. They didn't care about the messages or what Caleb did or what I saw at the grave. They had her voice notes. They had proof she was scared of me. They had photos of the bruises. Even with Caleb's plan exposed, it didn't erase what I did to her. It just added more weight to everything. They said it explained why I went there, but not what I did when I got there. Not the final kick, not the confession, not the thing I said right before he died. And definitely not the part about her coming out of the ground. They think I made it all up. A delusion, trauma, stress, whatever excuse they want to stamp on the paperwork to sleep better at night. But I know what I saw. She was there, her hand breaking through the dirt, her face watching me, not moving, not breathing, just watching. I hate being in prison, but I'm not scared. You know what scares me? The idea of dying, because I know for a fact that when that happens, she will be waiting for me.
Rick texted me the location at noon. Said he'd found something in an abandoned cemetery. Something inside a mausoleum that was leaking. He didn't give more details, just told me to bring gloves and not to tell anyone else. I got there by 2:30. His car was parked on the gravel path outside the main gate. The driver's side door was open. The engine was off, but the seat was warm like he'd just stepped out. His phone was still in the seat. I didn't yell out for him. The place didn't deserve noise. Even my own breath felt like trespassing. The cemetery had no signage, no flags, no flowers, just slabs of stone and overgrown grass. The trees around it were dead or dying. A rusted gate leaned off its hinges, and past it stood the mausoleum. Two floors of stone and rot, sealed by heavy doors, bound with a thick, rusted chain. The bolt cutters were right where they said he would be, wrapped in a rag next to a broken angel statue. The chain snapped with less force than I expected. As soon as I pushed the door open, a stench rolled out. It wasn't just rot. It was wet, chemical, bitter. It clung to the back of my throat and made my eyes water. I stepped inside anyway. The second the door clicked shut, the light vanished. Not dimmed, vanished, like something swallowed it whole. I turned on my flashlight. The hallway inside was narrow and covered in moisture. The walls sweated black streaks. There were tombs along the sides, most of them sealed with stone plates, but one was half open. The air around it shimmered slightly, like heat coming off of asphalt, except the air was cold. The closer I got, the more I noticed the liquid seeping from the crack. It was thick, almost like syrup, but darker, somewhere between oil and blood. It dripped slow, and where it touched the floor, the stone looked eaten away, like acid had been poured on it. My boots left prints in the slime. It stuck to my soles. At the far edge of the hall, I saw something on the wall. Footprints. Bare. Human. Long toes. Leading around a corner into another room, I paused. Not because I was scared, yet, but because I didn't hear anything. Not a breath. Not the sound of dripping. Nothing. Even my own steps felt muffled. Before going in, I tightened my grip on the flashlight and took a slow breath through my mouth. The silence pressed in harder the deeper I went. My light flickered once, and that was the first time I considered leaving. I followed the prints around the corner and found a smaller hallway with a collapsed wall on one side and a rusted gate hanging on the other. I stepped through the gate and into a narrow staircase that spiraled down beneath the mausoleum. The temperature dropped fast. My breath fogged the air. Each step groaned under my weight. Water dripped from somewhere below, but I couldn't tell from where. Halfway down, I heard something drag against the floor beneath me. Not footsteps. Something softer. Slow. I froze and leaned over the railing. I couldn't see much, but the light caught something wet slithering along the stone floor. My heart kicked harder in my chest. I crouched and waited, listening for it again, but it was gone. When I reached the bottom, I found a chamber much larger than the one above. The ceiling was low, and the walls were lined with smaller caskets. Every one of them was open. Dozens. Fluids leaked from all sides, mixing on the floor like runoff in a sewer. The smell hit harder down there. Sharp, metallic, like blood mixed with bleach. I saw flies, but they weren't moving, just twitching on the ground. In the far corner, hunched low, something was there. Alive. Its skin was pale and stretched. Limbs long and uneven, back, facing me. It breathed slow, ribs expanding, then caving in sharply like it hadn't eaten in days. I took one step back and a loose tile cracked under my boot. The thing stopped breathing. Then with a horrible twitch, it turned its head over its shoulder. Its face looked like it had been sewn on wrong. Too loose, too thin. The eyes were colorless. No pupils, no recognition, just empty orbs locked on me.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
The mouth was open, jaw creaking like a broken door, and a thick string of fluid drooling down its chin. It stood, one leg longer than the other, and stepped forward with a wet squelch. I didn't wait. I turned and ran up the stairs, heart pounding so loud I couldn't hear anything else. Behind me, I heard its limbs hitting stone. Crawling? Running? I don't know. I didn't look back. I ran. I reached the top and slammed the broken gate shut, but it didn't lock. I pushed a loose bench against it and kept moving. As I passed the leaking tombs again, something grabbed my leg. A hand. Cold. Human. White. It came from inside one of the caskets. I kicked at it and slipped backward, crashing into the wall. The hand released and I scrambled to my feet, but another arm had started to rise from a different tomb. I could hear groaning now. Dozens of them. I ran through the hallways, slipping in fluid, crashing into walls. More hands reaching from nothingness. More moans. Some from the walls, others from the cracks in the floor. It wasn't just one thing down there. They were all waking up. And they wanted out. The front doors were blocked. Something heavy was pressed against them from the outside. I didn't waste time trying to move it. I turned and sprinted to the collapsed wall I'd seen earlier. Behind it, there was a gap, just wide enough to crawl through. I dropped to the ground and forced my way in, scraping my arms and chest on broken stone. The tunnel led into a drainage shaft, cramped, rusted, dripping. I could hear movement behind me, slow and wet. Whatever that thing was, it had followed. Bones cracking, limbs bending the wrong way to squeeze inside. I crawled faster, knees raw from scraping the concrete, but I didn't stop. I could feel it getting closer. Its breath, hot and sour, touched my ankles. My phone buzzed in my pocket. It was Rick's number. I didn't answer, I just kept crawling. The buzzing echoed off the tunnel walls, and then it stopped, replaced by a voice. His voice, calling me from behind.
Hey, it's me. Wait up.
I didn't turn around. That wasn't Rick. It started like Rick, but halfway through the words slowed, warped and bubbled with something thick in its throat. I reached the end of the tunnel where a rusted gate hung off its frame. I pushed through, rolled onto the wet grass, and threw up. When I looked back, the tunnel was empty. I ran. Didn't care about direction. Just had to get away from that cemetery. My body ached. My skin burned, but I kept going until I found the road and followed it to the town's edge. I never stopped to check my phone or look back. Not once. Later that night, I got another call from Rick's number. I blocked it. Then another from an unknown contact. I blocked that too. The voicemails left behind were silent, except for breathing and the faint sound of dripping. That same slow, thick sound I'd heard inside the tombs. I tried telling someone. The police didn't care. Said the cemetery didn't exist. Said the woods in that area had been cleared years ago. I even went back there with someone a week later. Nothing was there. No cemetery. No mausoleum. Just trees. But I still had the footage from my phone. And the burns. And the dreams. Some nights I wake up choking, my lungs full of that same thick fluid I saw leaking from the tombs. Doctors call it acid reflux. I know better. It's not stomach acid. It's them. They're still in me. I moved to a different city, changed my name, stopped answering unknown calls. but the silence at night. It always brings it back. The footsteps. The sounds. The voice. Pretending to be rich.
I've been running Brenton Hill Cemetery for over a decade. Most of the day I'm alone, just walking between graves, checking records, keeping the place clean. It's quiet. No noise, no sudden surprises. That's what I liked about it. Thursday started like any other. I finished some paperwork, trimmed a few overgrown weeds near the eastern fence, and made sure everything was ready for a burial scheduled the next morning. Around 3:15 p.m., I locked the office and got in my car. A Tesla. Not for style, but because I don't like thinking while I drive. I let the GPS handle everything. Even though I know the way home, I tap the address like I always do. Just a routine. The map loaded, I started down the gravel path that cuts through the cemetery and connects to Carson Road. I was halfway to the gate when something blinked on the screen. Right in the backseat. At first, I just stared at it, not even thinking. Then I looked in the mirror. No one. Nothing. I turned around, checked the back seat. Still nothing. But the icon didn't go away. I pulled over next to the iron fence behind Section 7. No other cars, no people around, just wind and leaves. I got out, opened the back doors one by one, checked under the seats. Empty. I even checked the trunk just in case. Nothing. I got back in, locked everything, and stared at the screen. That icon was still there. Then the route disappeared. The entire map went black for a second. When it came back, it just said one thing, in a font I'd never seen on the Tesla before. You're not alone. It wasn't stylized. It wasn't meant to look like an alert. It looked typed, quick, and rough, like someone had forced it in. I tried resetting the screen. Nothing changed. I tried entering a new address. No response. The screen blinked again, then the map reloaded, but this time the destination had changed. I wasn't going home anymore. It now said, Brenton Hill Cemetery, Section 9. Section 9 was the oldest part of the cemetery. We hadn't buried anyone there in years. The records were incomplete, some graves were unmarked, some just numbers etched into stone. I rarely went there. Too much decay, too many unanswered questions. My stomach tightened. The name didn't show up in the system, but something about it tugged at the back of my head. Morley. Familiar in the wrong way. The car started moving by itself. At first I thought maybe I'd hit the pedal without noticing, but then the wheel turned on its own. Smooth, steady. It curved off the gravel path and started heading deeper into the cemetery, toward a service road that hadn't been used in months. I tried shifting it into park. Nothing. I tried the brake. Dead. The touchscreen stopped responding. The whole system locked me out. I kept looking around, half expecting to see someone nearby controlling the car with a remote or a laptop, but there was no one. Just the wind and rows of silent graves. I pounded the steering wheel and shouted, hoping maybe someone would hear me. Nothing. Just the sound of the tires crunching dead leaves. I tried the door handle. Locked. I pulled harder. Nothing. The car had sealed me in. I looked back at the screen. The pedestrian icon was still there. Same position. But now it had a name underneath. J. Morley. I didn't know any Morley. I searched my memory, trying to remember if that name showed up in any records. It didn't. The screen started glitching again. Quick flashes. For a second I saw a camera feed. Black and white, grainy. It looked like it was from inside a coffin. Wood walls, no movement. Then it vanished. The regular map returned. Destination, 15 meters to arrival. The car stopped. The ground outside was cracked, uneven. Tall grass and broken stones covered the area, no path. The air didn't feel right. Not heavier, not colder, just wrong. Like a place that had been left out too long. The second I opened the door, I heard something. A single knock from inside the car. It came from the trunk. I stood there for a second, not moving, trying to figure out if I'd imagined it. Then it came again, louder, rhythmic, one knock, then another. I stepped around to the back of the car and placed my hand on the handle. I hesitated, not because I was scared, but because nothing about this made sense. It was still daylight. I was standing in the middle of my workplace, and somehow I didn't feel like I had any control left. I popped the trunk. Empty. Just a spare tire and my work gloves. No one inside. No signs of anyone having been there. But the second the trunk clicked open, I heard both back doors unlock at once. I turned quickly and saw something that made my knees buckle slightly. There was a man sitting in the back seat. He wasn't breathing, he wasn't blinking. He wore a black suit, dirty at the sleeves, like it had been buried. His skin looked dry, stretched. His eyes were wide open, bloodshot, unmoving. He didn't acknowledge me. He just sat there, hands on his knees, head tilted forward slightly, like waiting, watching. The touchscreen blinked red. New message, same font. Put him back. The words pulsed like a heartbeat. I didn't know what they meant, but I knew it wasn't a suggestion. I didn't care what the screen said. I slammed the door shut. It bounced back open. I did it again. Same thing. The man's face didn't move, but now his lips had parted just slightly. Dry, colorless, as if he was about to speak but forgot how. I leaned into the car and grabbed his arm. The second I touched him, I felt how cold he was. Not just cool, cold, like metal pulled out of a freezer. The moment I pulled, he moved too. His head turned too far to the side. There was a loud cracking noise from his neck, but he didn't react. Then his mouth opened, wide and unnatural, and the sound that came out wasn't a scream, it was pure static. A wave of broken, deafening noise that made my ears ring and my head feel like it was cracking open. It didn't sound human, like someone was trying to broadcast a dead frequency through a body that forgot how to function. I stumbled back, tripping and hitting the gravel with my hands. I tried to crawl away, but the man stepped out of the car, one leg at a time, like his joints weren't working right. His knees bent too far. His steps were stiff, but deliberate. He stood over me. His eyes still didn't blink. Behind him, the ground began to split open. The grass and dirt peeled back in a perfect rectangle, like a grave being reopened. But there was no digging, no tools, just the earth giving way. That same message pulsed again on the screen. Put him back. Now. I stood up. I didn't care if he was real, dead, or something else. I ran at him, pushed with both arms. His body gave less resistance than I expected, like something hollow. He stumbled backward and fell into the hole. He didn't try to climb out. He didn't scream. He just lay there, looking up, arms by his side. The ground moved again, slowly starting to close over him, without dirt falling or wind blowing, like something was reclaiming him, swallowing him whole. I stepped back until my back hit the car. The soil didn't fall. It shifted inward, sucked tight like air being vacuumed out, like something below wanted him back. The second the grave sealed itself shut, the Tesla beeped. The screen flickered, then returned to normal. GPS, route home, music controls, like nothing had happened. I got in without checking anything else. I didn't want to look at the back seat. I drove straight home. I haven't gone back to the cemetery since that day. I called in sick the next morning and told the board I wanted to resign. I didn't explain why. I didn't mention the screen, the grave, the man. They wouldn't believe me. 2 weeks later, I got a notification on my phone. It was from the Tesla app, a location update. The car was parked in my driveway, but the notification said, "Passenger detected, J. Morley." I thought burying him was enough.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Maybe it never was. Maybe he just needed the ride.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.